Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. Hour number two already. It's 5 o'clock here in the Bayou City. All right, let's get to our phones and go to Captain Mike McBride, see what he's up to this morning. Mike, what are you doing up early and checking in for? What's up?
What's up, Big Mick?
Not a lot, man.
Oh, I always get this time of morning. But got a couple questions for you. Number one, what are your tides looking like up there?
Bulled up, man. Equinox tides.
Big time, right?
Yeah. And then plus we've had these east and northeast winds to help push even more water in.
Oh, yeah. Even Rockport, little bay, it's flooded all across the road and everything. We probably got a foot down here.
Yeah.
Which is significant for the lower Laguna Madre.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, I talk to Watkins, Jay Watkins, two, three times a week. And we used to think that when a tide bulled up like that, the fish went shallow.
Not necessarily.
Well, we have since changed our minds.
Yeah.
The bait gets so damn scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And we're thinking they go down a structure where they're, we think they go down a structure where they can easier catch bait. We don't think they go shallow when that tide bulls up like that. You want to get to the cord grass? Yeah, the reds, you know. Well, what is your opinion on that?
Well, you know, before these tides show up, we kind of know where the fish are in the areas we're fishing, you know. And a lot of times, the redfish will kind of move in and go real shallow, get as far up as they can. On occasion, the trout will, but for the most part, Kim Golden and I were just talking about that a while ago. They're having to wade out deeper and throw to that drop-off in that structure, whatever those fish were before the king tides, and they're still there. I mean, you got to...
Watson said he wasn't tall enough to catch them.
No, it's a tall boys game right now if you're wade fishing. Tell Jay to charge his batteries up on his troll motor and get out there and get them, man. But
oh, Lord, he ain't going to do that. But he said, no, Mike, I'm not tall enough to catch those daggum things.
Well, just tell him he needs to cast farther. Chunk it as far as Cliff Webb does, and you'll reach him.
Well, I tell you what's working down here, brother. walk of the spoil banks.
Right.
Shin deep and throwing out to 5 foot of water, and that's working.
Yeah. Ledges and guts and stuff like that are working good right now. All the drop-offs and they're just staying where it was 3 and 4 feet before these tides. Now they're in 5-6 feet of water, and you just got to throw to them.
But you can do that like walking spoil banks. You don't have to, you know,
right?
Get your waders wet. Well, we don't need waders, but you don't have to get your waders wet. You can do a spoil bank and throw out those drop-offs, and you can do quite well. But you got to use like a quarter-ounce pail. They're there. I mean, but you got to get deeper. I just want to know your opinion on these high tides on where you think the fish went.
No, they didn't move the... We did because the water shoved us in tighter. We can't reach them. But if you've got a shoreline that does have some structure, like up here this time of year, that when that happens, it's a lot easier for us. You guys are more handicapped with it because you don't have all the oyster beds and the clamshell mounds and all that like we do on these drop-offs. And
man, we have nothing like that. You know, but we do have spoil banks so we can throw
right,
off and drop
and
off.
And
we do
hey,
have
that'd
the west
be a
bank.
Good pattern. I mean, that's...
It is. It is. And we do have the west bank where you can walk out there and throw off that drop off. We can do that. But
yeah.
No, we don't have... I miss Galveston so much. I don't care what anybody says. I caught more fish up there than I've ever done down here. Not as big, but more numbers. Especially San Luis Pass area and stuff, and
yeah,
San Luis on that area.
Well, we just been through so many adversities up here in the last 10 years that but we are starting to grow a fishery again, and we're just having to wait on our fish to grow up. And hopefully, if the creeks don't rise and the rivers don't flood again and all that, we'll keep these fish here. You know, the little ones, that fresh water doesn't affect them like it does the bigger fish. And we shall see. But we're growing some good redfish. They love that fresh water, and redfish do, flounder too.
Mickey, we used to tube fish between Sierra Leone and Eagle Point.
Oh, yeah, all the pier piling stuff over there, everybody getting the tubes to get out there.
We would go out there at night and tube fish.
Yeah,
we would tube fish. And we went out there when it was like 4% salinity. Nothing.
Right.
And just stomped the fire out of them.
Yep.
Oh, gosh. That was such an excellent fishery. I miss it so bad. Again, I've caught more fish in the Galveston Complex than I ever did down here. Just not as big.
Yeah. Well, our fish broke it. Our fish would kind of break at 8 pounds, but we had millions of 7 and 8 pounders. And then, you know, you'd catch a 9 here and there, and somebody would bust a 10 now and again. But hopefully those days are going to come back again.
You know what's interesting is the most legitimate 9-10 pounders I've ever seen caught at a Galveston Complex was underneath those stupid little dinks.
Yeah.
And I guess those big old fish were in there eating them. I don't know.
I wouldn't doubt it. I've seen it before. I took a trout to a taxidermist one time. It was my first 10-pounder, and it had a little trout in its belly when he skinned it, you know, did a skin mount on it. I remember Al Hillmeyer calling me and saying, hey, this thing had a baby trout in it.
Well,
how about
Mickey,
that?
We have seen 16-inch trout in another trout's mouth. We've done that. I mean, they're animals. I mean, they're absolutely animals.
Well, that's why they have such a hard time at the hatcheries raising them, because they're so cannibalistic. They'll eat each other. Once they turn into fingerlings and everything, they start eating each other.
I think they do. Anyway, my question was, I was wondering what you thought about these high tides. Everybody thinks they got to go shallow. Me and Watkins disagree. We think they go deeper at first. Again, I was wondering what your opinion was.
Yeah, I agree. Now I think when you have a weather system coming, it changes. Like, say there's a tropical storm in the Gulf, and it blows those tides in. But you know, we're on the equinox tides right now, and it is different. But your areas that were holding fish shallow, like knee deep water, then they turn into waist deep or better water. And a lot of times, you know, if you've got structure in there to hold them and the bait fish, that's the two keys there, structure and bait fish. And if you have a shallow area that those fish were there, and then these tides bull up, but the bait stays there because of the structure and the guts, like you're talking about, spoil bank patterns and all that, that'll hold them, and you can still reach them. But other areas, just like flats, basic flats, I think they just go deeper, without a doubt.
Well, that's what me and Jay talked about. Normally, you would think that the tides bull up like that, you know, getting the court rest, everything, that the fish would pull shallow. We have kind of gotten away from that. It's like the bait is so scattered.
Yeah.
So, again, it's so funny. Jay Watkins is such a short knocker.
He's a low tide fisherman.
Oh, yeah. He said, Mike, I'm not tall enough to catch him.
Yeah.
But, they're doing a little better up there. I mean, they're catching some fours and sixes.
Yeah, it's a good topic. And, you know, I remember, you know, over in East Bay, in the early or late spring and early summer, you know, these fish would just, in the mornings you get there with a bull tide and think, man, we're going to get them right against that bank. Wrong. we'd go out deep. You'd have to go out over your waist or chest deep and throw to those fish to catch them. Then the tide would go out.
That's when he had good old rollover fast.
Yeah, and the tide would go out, and then we caught ourselves catching them right next to the bank on that extremely low tide. They'd get in there as tight as they could on a low tide. Isn't that something? It was just the opposite.
You don't want to know what I did on Pepper Grove Point. I ran my damn daggum boat 30 feet into the bank. It was so foggy. That's another story. We loved it over there. But that was when, you know, the cut was still open. Are you fishing much?
A little bit. Not right now. I got too much stuff going on at home, and I'm right here in fishing season is what I call it. It's time to start getting after it, and I've got some issues with my house, and I've got guys there working on stuff, and, you know, it's a long story.
Y'all need to try to pull the plug and come down here. Even all summer, they're catching 28s, still weighing 7.5 pounds.
Right.
No, we have recovered, I think, better than anybody else on the coast has.
Yeah, so, you know, Corpus and Mansfield down y'all's way, y'all bounce back real fast.
Well, I don't know about Corpus, but down here is stupid. I tell you who's doing very well, very, very well is Joey Farah.
Yeah, he's been catching them all year, man. Big ones all year. Cliff Webb, too.
Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, he doesn't go far either. He's going just right there south of the causeway.
Yeah.
Not going far. But I tell you what, seriously, down here, a 28 is not uncommon. And they're still weighing, you know, 7.5 pounds.
Yeah.
That's... Y'all need to come down if you can.
Well, it's just time constraints, man. Just, no, just don't have the extra time to get away and do anything.
Yeah. I know, but sometimes you just got to pull a plug and go do something cool.
Well, tell my listeners that. Folks, we're going to put the outdoor show on hold for a couple of weeks so I can go down there and catch big trout with Mike McBride. Yeah, it'd be fun.
No, gosh. Well, we'll take care of you. I'm going to tell you something. Well, we'll take care of you, but I'm going to tell you something. They are here. It is right. Stupid. We're running those flats and seeing stuff, Mickey, that you're going, oh, really? Really? Up in that hard, flat sand? And, you know, the water temperature is like 90 degrees.
Right,
and we're running that sand flat and seeing these stupid fish, but the deal is they're scattered singles, and you can't catch those. You can't catch them unless you side cast them. You just can't catch, but they're there.
Right.
But if you want to catch a big fish, pull the plug. Come on down.
I'm good at doing that. I can pull the plug, buddy. Well, speaking of pull the plug, I got to go. It's break time, Mike.
Yeah, I know you do.
Hey, I appreciate the call this morning.
Thank you so much for accepting my call.
Oh, anytime, man. That was real good talking to you, bud.
Well, we've always had fun talking.
Oh, yeah. We're good at that. Stop it, Mike. I got to go,
no,
man. See you, buddy.
No, he's later. He's a friend of mine. I can do that.
I know. He's a good guy. I'm fixing to
call him right now.
Oh, yeah,
he's great.
All right, buddy.
Yeah, okay. Well, thank you so much again.
All right, go catch a big one. All right. Well, folks, if you're looking for the ultimate outdoor adventure, welcome to Rusty Hook Ranch, a premier hunting and fishing destination right in Matagorda, Texas. Whether you're after waterfowl, quail, thermal hog, or even alligator hunts, Rusty Hook Ranch has it all. And don't forget about their top-tier Matagorda Bay fishing charter. So bring your friends, bring your clients. Let the boys at Rusty Hook Ranch take care of everything from five-star lodging, skeet shooting, and sporting clays to a fully stocked bass pond. And your weekend here, it'll be one you won't soon forget. And if you need a place for team building, family reunions, weddings, and other events, Rusty Hook Ranch, they can sleep large groups of up to 40, and host events for up to 300 people. So why wait? Experience the best of Texas at Rusty Hook Ranch. Book your adventure today at RustyHookRanch.com. That's RustyHookRanch.com. Tell them Captain Mickey sent you. Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show on this Sunday morning. It's 5:20 here in the Bayou City. Let's run down Port O'Connor now and check in with Captain Lynn Smith. Lynn, good morning. What's up, bud?
Oh, man. Listen to McBride is a piece of work, isn't he?
Yeah, it's he probably hadn't even been to bed yet. Probably been up playing his harmonica all night. Sharpening hooks and putting on split rings.
Oh, I'm telling you, man. That boy is a piece of work, I'll tell you. I hadn't fished with him in years.
I know. Yeah. I hadn't hung out with him in a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. He's a happening, I'll tell you. He's crazy. He is. But he's fun to fish with. He is.
He's a good guy.
He is. But, anyway, this week has been something, man. We've had some high winds and full moon and, oh, man.
High water, winds, high moon.
Yeah.
Boy, that was a pretty moon, that harvest moon, wasn't it?
It was.
Everybody's calling it the super moon and all that, but every October I always thought it was called the harvest moon. We just do away with that what?
No, that's what I heard. That's what I called it. It works on those fish, so I'll tell you. I had time, you know. When I don't have a party, I'm still out there scouting, you know, trying to locate fish and make sure you stay on them. Well, that moon really worked on them for me. And I was running around checking spots. And if I'm running around looking at different areas, I'm throwing topwaters and whatever. And I caught a lot of fish early in the week, but they were small, you know. They're small reds, small trout. And I'd come in shaking my head. Of course, I was fighting that wind, too. So I'd run back in the lakes, try to get away from that wind. I'd catch small reds, I'd have good reds follow my topwaters, but they wouldn't take them.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, man, what's with this? I was changing lures and
beating your head up against the console going, what the heck going on here, man?
Yeah, it was driving me crazy. Anyway, as the week went on, it got better. You know, it got better. They started kind of concentrating on the baits. They started eating a little better. So it's getting better now.
You're getting off that moon, too, you know, getting farther off the backside of it.
Exactly. So anyway, they're starting to eat better now, that's good. Yeah. So anyway, it felt good yesterday, but it's kind of crazy. I was talking to one of my neighbors yesterday. We were at the bait camp yesterday, and I was waiting on customers, and he said, "Man," he said, "I was back in one of the lakes." He said, I like to wade. He said, "Boy, there was a monster alligator in that lake."
Oh,
he said, I don't think I'm going to wade that lake today. I said, "Yeah, there's some big ones." And I saw a big one yesterday myself. It makes you kind of a little leery to wade some of those lakes. You see a 12
they
to 14
make me nervous,
foot alligator.
Man. I mean, I think I'm more nervous from an alligator than I am a shark.
Well, me too. If you see an alligator that big, you know, I'm not nervous around gators that are smaller than that. I've been around them all my life.
You start getting 10, 12 footers swimming around in the water you're fishing in. I don't like that, man.
I don't either.
Everybody always go, a gator won't eat you. I said, well, how come we see so many of these stories coming up all the time? Or that guy said, no swimming here, but he dove off in the lake anyway, and a gator ate him. So, you know.
I saw a pretty good one yesterday.
They eat a lot of dogs during the duck season, too. You're having a warm year, and they're not hibernating yet. Especially teal season. How many dogs on our Gulf Coast get eaten by alligators?
Well, you know, I think I may have told you this, but when I was growing up as a kid, growing up in Port Arthur, You know, we had a lot of P-row boats.
Yeah.
You know what a P-row is.
Oh, yeah.
And I never forget, my grandfather told me, he said, don't ever carry a dog with you in a P-row, because a big gator would turn that P-row over to get to that dog.
Yep.
He told me that. Now, I never forgot that. And that's true. I mean, I can see where that would happen. You know, you run into about a 10 or 12 foot gator, he'd go after that dog. I guarantee you.
Without a doubt.
Now, I'm telling you. Yes, sir. And I've seen some big ones, man. Mm. Man, oh man. And there's that one I saw yesterday was probably 12 footer. He was a good one. Mm. Yes, sir. And somebody, I think I told you before, but somebody put on Facebook, they were fishing over in front of the army hole, and they showed it on Facebook. They were panning, and they showed this guy wade fishing in front of the army hole, and then they just kind of panned behind him, and there was about a 7 or 8 footer following him right behind him, swimming right behind him. Yeah, but there was a couple of gators that hang out over there right in the army hole, and I've seen them in there several times. But you just gotta keep your eye on them. I guarantee you. Oh man.
Yep. It's P row boats and they're like little dugout canoes. I mean.
Yeah.
There's
point on both ends.
Oh yeah, point on both ends, and hey, they're small. You're low to the water, and I mean, a gator can come over the side of one of those in a heartbeat.
Oh yeah, little Cajun boats is what they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cajun P-Row.
Man, everybody used to use them years ago when I was young, you know, to get back in the follow those ditches into lakes and the marsh, you know, decoys, you know, their gun and all their stuff in there and paddle all the way back in there.
Oh yeah. Real shallow draft. And real easy to turn over, I guarantee
you. Very easy, yeah. Just like a canoe.
Uh-huh. But, yeah.
I always like one-man canoes better than two-man. You get one extra guy in there that he shifts just right, and you're both flipping over. You're done.
Oh, yeah.
Over and out, but, baby.
Well, the other morning, I may have told you this, but the other morning I was going out. You know how when you leave the fishing center here,
right,
and you go out toward Little Mary's, that Little Mary's cut, just as I'm getting to the entrance into Little Mary's, there were three alligators right there at the entrance to Little Mary's. And as I went through it, one of them, boy, I thought I was going to hit him. And, boy, he was hurrying. And he came almost completely out of the water as he got up close to the bank. He came about halfway out of the water. He was probably a 7 or 8 footer.
Yeah.
And boy, he was getting out of my way. But they're getting to where there's so many of them, it's incredible. And we're basically having a drought, so a lot of them are coming out of these lakes that are on the islands and the spoil banks and all that. So they're out of those freshwater lakes and they're into the bay. And I'm seeing a lot of them in intercoastal. If I'm running down the intercoastal early, and like there's no boat traffic, I really see them, you know, crossing the intercoastal.
It's like a Tarzan movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
Johnny Weissmuller.
Oh man, that's one area that I fished.
But he could outswim a crocodile.
Oh yeah, you know it. Yeah.
On video, anyway.
Yeah, you count on that. I remember. When I was in Port Arthur, I was in high school and everything. I used to go over into Louisiana and fish a compartment over there, one of those reserves.
Right.
And I'd run down this canal, and I used to love to be the first boat to run down a canal because it was like you were in Africa, because the alligators would be coming off of both banks.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, one after another, man. They were everywhere.
Yeah, they'd be like up on the bank, son, and you run through there in a boat, and they all just, man, they're all diving in the water.
They are.
Don't fall in.
And you got to that compartment. You could drag your boat over the levee into the compartment, and we would bass fish in that compartment. And on a calm day, you're in there fishing along, and you look up, and you could see at least 300 alligators minimum. They were everywhere. And if you're throwing a topwater bait like a jitterbug or something
couldn't
like that,
couldn't keep them off of it.
Oh man, they followed all the way to the boat. You know. Oh, they were all over it.
Like puppy dogs.
I'm telling you. Yeah.
Bad.
Yes, they are.
All right. Let me knock this break out. I'll come right back at you, bud. Hang with me, Lynn.
All right, man.
All right.
You bet.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the Outdoor Show. All right. It's 5:35. All right, Lynn, we are back, buddy.
Oh, boy, I can't help but think with this full moon and this front that came in, it's got to have brought some big ducks down, but I haven't seen any yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't seen any. But usually there's some pintails usually come down with teal. You know, you'll see some. And but I haven't seen any yet.
I think Bink was seeing a few on his teal hunts, you know, seeing a few pintails there towards the end. And I'll be talking to him later this morning. He stays on top of that. I think he probably goes, checks his water levels and all that in his marsh ponds every day. So at least a couple of times a week. Got to stay on top of that. So. But it was teal season was good for some and not so good for others.
That's what I heard.
It just we've seen better teal season, believe me.
Yeah, I'm seeing a few teal.
Yeah. Now the season's over, they ought to be swarming on in here, bud, with the hummingbirds.
Right. Yeah.
What do we get? 9 days. So that they cut it short.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's usually the case. Yeah. And, you know, of course, that running yesterday morning, it was chilly. Running out on the water yesterday.
Yeah, well, I went on there. You know, all the temperatures over this way along the coast were, you know, 73, 74. But, man, right at daylight when I was heading out to my house, it was 64. I said, man, it cooled down a lot those last 2 hours. Man.
Oh, I was wishing I had a jacket. I said, man, where'd this come from? You know, and made my neck swell.
Yeah.
And I talked to that ranch manager down there, and I said, have y'all shot any does yet? He said, no. Of course, all the does have twins, you know.
Right.
And the fawns are all still have their spots. He said, they all still have spots. So he's not letting anybody shoot does. And, you know, the does haven't kicked the fawns off.
No.
So,
you know, it's, man, when I'm down at Blaine's, now he's farther down. It's a whole different animal way down there. But, man, you see, at the beginning of deer season and halfway into it, you'll see fawns with spots on them because their rut is so sporadic. It's all season long down there until you get to the main rut that usually happens right at the end of the season. And, you know, all these deer are bred at different times through a 3-month period. So,
I know
it's kind of weird.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's a whole different animal. And then, you know, of course we can hunt till on an MLD ranch. We can hunt till the end of February. So, I've been down there in George West. I've been down there in February, and actually just sitting there in a stand, and I heard something behind me, and I looked back, and I had a 12 point, a big 12, and a big 14 point chasing a doe.
Still doing it.
Back and forth. That was a secondary rut.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were in full rut chasing that doe.
Yeah, all these does don't come into heat at the same time.
No. Mm-mm.
The bucks are always ready.
But we have a secondary rut. We have two ruts. So, I mean, that was kind of late February.
Yeah, I believe it. This past year was weird, man. Blaine and them were, running all those quail hunts after deer season was over, and that's when they were seeing all the monster bucks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And the same deal, I looked back there, and I was looking at those two deer with my binoculars, and I went, oh, my goodness. Now, where did these two bucks come from, you know? I mean, man, they were nice deer. Big old chocolate horn bucks, you know?
And I love them chocolate horns, man. They're so pretty.
Oh, aren't they? Oh, man. I'm telling you. It's just nothing like it.
Yeah.
Nothing like it. But, yeah, and just wonder where they came from. You didn't see them during the regular season.
Nope.
No way. And they're nocturnal.
They really
you don't
are.
See them on game cameras. You don't see them on the game cameras now. How do they do that?
I have no idea. They're smarter than we are, apparently.
They are. They are. I hunted one blind that I know good and well. There was one buck that I saw several times out of this one stand that he was way down the Sendero coming out of a draw, and he never came to the feeder. Never did. But I'd get a glimpse of him several times, and he was a big, heavy horned deer, but he never would come to the feeder. So consequently, you never got him on a game camera.
Right.
You never did. But he was in that area. You know, he had his trail that he covered. But he just stayed away from those feeders. I mean, like you say, they're smarter than
anything.
Well,
he's been around forever, and he's been watching all his buddies walk out there and get smoked.
That's right. That's right. Oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, they didn't get big by being stupid, you know.
That's like these pigs, you know, the hogs on these ranches. You, they'll all gang up in one area, and you'll send somebody in there and say, man, shoot as many as you want, and after you do, you make one good killing or kill two or three of them there, they don't ever come back to that feeder. They won't even come near it.
That's right.
They wise up quick.
Boy, they do, man. Yeah. Well, pigs are smart. They are that, you know. And like if you set a trap.
Especially Arnold, that one on Green Acres. He could turn the TV on and change the channel.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, God. I forgot all about that.
Arnold
now
the
you
pig.
See. Yeah. Now, you set a trap, and 9 times out of 10, you should move that trap. You know, once you catch some pigs in it, you really should move it.
Yeah.
Because they get smart. And they won't go in that trap anymore.
Sure they do.
Yeah. But, yeah, we need to move it. I was down there at George West one time, and I told the ranch manager, I said, I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back home tomorrow. I said, I need to take a pig. We need to bait that trap. And so we baited the trap one afternoon. And so the next morning I was doing something there at the ranch house, and he went out. He went out to, I don't know what he was doing, just checking some stuff. And he came back in, and I saw his headlights coming back into the ranch. And he came by where I was doing some things there at the house. And I said, did you go by that trap? He said, yep. I said, anything in it? He said, yep. Got good news, and I got bad news. I said, oh, yeah?
Uh-oh.
What's the good news? He said, there's two pigs in the trap. I said, really? He said, what's the bad news? He said, the two Volkswagens. I said, oh no. He said, yeah, there's a boar and a sow in there. And he said, they're like Volkswagens, man.
Oh,
I said, oh my goodness. Oh, I don't want that. He said, no, you don't.
Hey, I was hunting Cthulhu with a buddy of mine, old Wayne Webb, and we'd both shot a deer, and we're watching the weather, so the day before, we baited the hog trap and had it all set up. Well, the weather's going south real bad. I mean, we're talking about road closures, you know, icing over and all that, so we're going to get on back home. Well, we're leaving out that morning. I said, you know, we need to go close that trap up so nothing gets in there because nobody's going to be down here for a week or two. So we went by there to check that trap, and there was a whole family of coons in it.
Oh. Oh, my goodness. We had
no hogs. Had plenty of coons, though. There must have been seven or eight coons in that trap.
We had one young hog that had gotten in a feed pen, and he'd gotten in there. There was a lot of cactus in this one pen, and he'd gotten in there, and he hid in all that cactus, and he stayed in there. And so anyway, we knew he was in there, but we couldn't find him. You know, it was funny. And so anyway, one of the guys said, "I want that pig. I want that young pig." So we said, "All right." We said, "We'll get him out of there." So anyway, this guy got his pistol and he said, "I'm gonna shoot that pig." And he said, "Just the right size and just the right size to take home, and I'll barbecue that little rascal." So we said, "Okay." So we opened one of the panels on the pen, and I said, "All right, he's gonna come out right here." So we all got behind the back side of the pen,
right,
and we started beating on the pen and everything to run him out. He came running out of that pen, out of all that cactus, and he came right out of that pen. That old boy emptied his pistol, never cut a hair on him.
Never cut a feather.
That was so funny. We laughed till we cried. And he never touched him. And that pig is still running, probably.
That's why you're supposed to shoot him in the pen and then walk in there and drag him out. Which I have one of them big round pins, those the fall type.
It was pretty big pen. We put panels around this one feeder, but
I got you.
The all this cactus had grown in there, and it was thick cactus in there, and it was so funny. But gosh almighty, we laughed, we kidded that guy like crazy. But man, oh man. And I used to love to hunt that stand because the big deer would come into that stand from behind all that cactus, and they would just appear like a ghost.
Yeah,
just out of nowhere. He'd be sitting in the out of nowhere. From? Yeah, out of nowhere. All of a sudden, you'd see these horns pop up right behind that cactus, and you go, "Oh, look at that one!" Yeah, they just like a ghost. They'd appear. Oh my goodness.
I saw that young mountain lion yesterday. I was on the phone with Hillman, and it wasn't even close to dark. It was like 6 o'clock in the evening. It was still plenty light, and he must have been hungry. He was coming across the road out of that high fence over there. He wanted him a chicken or a duck or something for supper.
Oh my goodness!
So he came.
Did you see that? Did you see that on Facebook? Some guy had a deer in the back of his truck, and he was fixing to drag it out.
Yeah,
and a mountain lion jumped in there.
That was AI. I guarantee
somebody made that. It had to be.
That's something.
The mountain lion jumped in and drag it out.
Yeah, and that shark one, you could tell that was fake, too. Hey, they could make some really good movies now with all this AI technology and everything, the way they can, do the graphics and everything.
Yeah, showing those great whites dragging people off boats.
Jumping up on the side of the boat, and you can look at the shark, and you tell it's not even wet. There's no water dripping off of it. grabbed that girl's arm and took her over the side. I started laughing.
Oh, yeah.
I laughed at those videos you sent me. I'm going, man.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that something?
You got that down.
I mean, it's neat. It's neat.
I always depend on you for a couple of laughs every day when you send me one of those.
They're great. Yeah. Well, it's just one of these days they're going to be typical true stories in Port O'Connor. Oh, my goodness.
Yep.
But it might be from down at Greens. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
No, East Matagorda Bay, man. Everybody's been talking about how many sharks have been in that bay this year.
Really?
You know, I used to never hardly see anything like that.
Huh.
I was talking to Tommy the other morning. He said, man, this was the biggest shark he's ever seen come by him. It was a big old giant bull.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm seeing a lot here. I haven't seen any in the last few days. But
they're getting ready to leave. Everything's moving back out.
Yeah.
Get them out of here.
But the other day, I was back in one of the lakes, and I was way back in the back end. And I just caught a redfish, and and just put him in the box, and I looked up, and about a 6 or 7 foot bull just came cruising by, you know. Yeah. Now, I told my customers, I said, look at this shark. And he just came cruising by. Yeah.
I want y'all to catch another one. He was going to get it before you got it in the boat.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So they're all over the place. I had some customers one day back in Big Pocket, and there was about an 8 foot bull shark that had been back in there all summer, and that was like his territory, and we'd seen him almost every day, and I didn't say anything to these guys about it, but that bar that's back in there that's right in the middle of Big Pocket, and we got out off on the bar, but we're going to weigh the gut on that north side. And so we just started to weigh that gut, and all of a sudden one of the guys said, uh-oh. And I looked over, and you could see his dorsal fin and his tail out of the water.
Oh, boy, he's cruising on
and he was on that. Oh, yeah, he was on that bar, and he was just easing along on that bar. You know, he was about 50 yards from us. And this guy said, what do you do? What are we going to do? And I said, don't feed him. Yeah, just don't feed him.
Don't run.
Yeah, don't feed him. And he said, oh, my God. He said, he's big. I said, yes, he is. Just don't feed him. Just keep fishing, but don't feed him.
Boy.
I said, he stays over here. This is his home. I mean, he stayed there all summer. We'd see him almost every day.
Hey, sharks starting to get smart and trained like the dolphins. You know, they find a boat that's catching fish in an area they're living in. They're going to live on that boat.
That's right. They will.
They'll like lay you under say, your boat, you know, like up here when we're fishing in the summer. Fishing deep water like gas wells and stuff like that. They'll just sit under your boat and wait for you reel a fish in, and they'll come out from under the boat and smoke it.
That's right.
And it's always a big one. They don't want to mess with pencils or any of the smaller fish. They want a big trout or a redfish.
Especially
bulls. They love them redfish, man.
Man. That figures. Be the biggest one of the day.
Mm-hmm. Always. It always is.
God,
I had a big one on a few years ago and got it up next to the boat, and one of my guys was going to net it for me. And he took me around the back, and I brought him up around the motor, and Raphael's got the net in the water, ready to net that fish. I'm going to lead him into it. And that big old bull shark jumped all over that. It got everybody wet in the boat. I thought he was coming over the side.
Man.
He grabbed a 7-pound trout and just smoked the drag.
You know, that brings up another deal. You know, I ask guys these days, I say, you know, you have a net? You know, we're going to wade and everything. I go, you have a net? And they go, no. I just grab them. I go, no. You need a net. Let me loan you one. Because you don't want to read out there.
A long boga grip.
Yeah, but you need a net. Some of the areas we're going to wade, you need a net. You don't want to reach out and grab a trout like we have done for years in the past.
I've been doing it all my life and always worried about that. That was my biggest fear, is losing my hand to one. Because you can see they can cut a trout off in a millisecond behind his head, just a perfect precision cut. So imagine that would do to your hand.
How many years have we been doing that? I mean, just reaching out and grab a trout behind
my whole life.
You know,
I still ain't using that. I don't even drag one.
As many sharks as I've seen in this area, I started carrying a net. It's not worth it to draw back a nub. You know, I'm gonna net them. And
nobody wants a nubber.
No. So, I mean, there's just too many now. I've never seen this many in the area. They're not after you. They're after your fish.
Sure.
And you know, if your hand is on that fish, your hand's going to get in the way.
Hey, there's so many sharks in our waters. If they were hunting humans, you'd hear 10, 20 shark attacks a day.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And you know, it's just incredible. You know, you hear a shark attack. You know, there's been a shark attack. It wasn't a shark attack. Basically, it was an accident mainly.
Yeah, somebody just got bit. You know.
Yeah, exactly. And it was in murky water.
Always.
Yep.
I know a guy that got bit on the foot in the surf and you know, murky water.
Yep. Yep. I was down in Florida. We were snook fishing, and we were standing on the sandbar, and there was one guy in front of us about 30 yards. He hooked a snook, about a 10 or 12 pound snook, and it came out of the water shaking. And boy, all of a sudden, I had about a 4 foot bull just shot by me, headed toward that snook.
Headed for that fish distress. That's what they're attracted to.
Uh-huh.
Fish in distress.
And he shot by me on my left side, headed toward that snook. And then here came another one about the same size on my right side, shot toward that snook. And I said, I'm getting out of this murky water. I'm heading up on that sandbar.
I heard that. You dang right, man. All right, man. Lynn, I'm out of time already. If somebody wants to call you about coming down and hooking up with you, you know, doing a fishing trip or going deer hunting, give them some info how they can reach you.
Yes, sir. And give me at 361-935-6833. And while we were talking, I was getting a call. It was McBride calling me.
Yeah. Tell him to leave us alone.
I know it.
Tell him to go fishing. Go catch all them 28 inches, man.
I know it.
All right.
Yeah,
buddy.
Yeah. All right, man. Have a good one.
Later, Lynn. See you now.
All right.
All right, bye. It's time for our top of the hour break, national anthem. You're listening to The Outdoor Show. We'll be right back.